Welcome to the River Talk Podcast. This is a podcast about, I don't know, rivers, rafting, kayaking, kind of whatever we feel like talking about. I usually do it with Priscilla Macy and Eric Weiseth. They're at a meeting right now, or they're at meetings. So I'm here with my friend Aaron Cavagnolo. Welcome to the podcast again, Aaron. You're like our third host.
Well, thanks. I love getting to come on and talk to you guys about boating. It's always a good time to be on here.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. And our guest Jeremiah will patch in here in a second. He's the COO over Sotar. But first, we're going to talk about news of the week. And the only news that I have is that next week is the America Outdoor Show. And that's a big show that outfitters get together with gear manufacturers. And we have meetings for a week. And we talk about rafting. And hopefully, and Eric and I are going to try to do a podcast from America Outdoors next week if we can figure out some of the technical aspects of it. So that's the only news I can think of. Aaron, do you have any news?
I got two pieces of news, actually. Oh. First one is, in terms of news of the week, this is that time of the year for applying for permits. You know, permits, you know, for the Rogue and Idaho rivers and out in Utah. And so I think most of them go until late December, early January, I believe. Do they start January 1st? I thought they started at the end of December. I thought they were open right now.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the second news of the week is, I don't know if you've heard, Zach, but Arda has a new CEO.
Yeah.
Merrick Robinson is a new CEO at Arda, which is kind of exciting. Steve Welch was there for, well, since like early 1980s. So how many years is that? 1984. Yeah. So, oof.
35 years.
Yeah.
Yep. Steve worked for Arda. He ran Arda for 35 years. And yeah, that is big news.
Yeah, totally. All right. So that's all the news I've got, Zach.
Cool. Well, I want to quickly introduce Jeremiah. Jeremiah is the chief operating officer at Sotar. He's been doing it for a couple of years now, like 3 years. And we just brought him on. I've seen some photos of a new kayak he's been working on. And he's told me about it a little bit that I want to hear more about. And we just kind of want to hear what Sotar's up to. So, yeah, welcome, Jeremiah.
Well, great. Thanks for having me, Zach. I really appreciate the call. We got lots of stuff going on around here. That new pack raft / lightweight kayak we're having on display at the AO show next week. So really looking forward to that. It's been pretty cool because we're working with Arez, our material manufacturer, on developing a new, lighter, stronger material. And it kind of just, you know, got the brain turning earlier this year once I got a sample of it. Like, oh man, I can do so much with this fabric. So we built one prototype, and I took it to Fiji when we did the Eco Challenge, and ran it down to Nauvoo up there, and you know, beat the crap out of it, and made some changes here and there, and wanted to play around with some more. And then over the last probably month or so, I've been, you know, building one, testing it, making changes, building another one, testing it, changing it. So the one for next week will be, I think, version 4 or 5.
Whoa.
But it's coming along pretty good.
So I'm dying to talk about this kayak, and I know Aaron is too, because we are both aficionado of light boats. Mm-hmm. But I want to go back. What is E-Res? I barely know what that is. I know a little bit about it, but do you want to talk about E-Res and what they do?
Yeah,
where they're at?
It's a pretty cool company. So they're an Israeli company, and E-Res is the name of the kibbutz, which is the type of village that they have over in Israel. So essentially the whole community works in a kind of communal sense. So most of the town works in the material factory, and then they have farms and a whole bunch of other stuff going on. But they primarily make technical urethane textiles. So they have their own plant for casting and coating in various urethanes. They do lots of PVC also. They just built a new plant a couple years ago to mix and dye their own PVC. So they're doing everything from the ground up, basically, except for weaving the cloth that the coatings go on. And the really cool thing about them is that as far as material suppliers go, they're still relatively small and relatively nimble. So when you're able to do things like this kayak project and give them feedback, they really listen, which is great. So we can go back and forth and change the chemistry a little bit to kind of optimize the properties we want. So for instance, this fabric, it's a polyester Kevlar ripstop. What the polyester does better than, you know, nylon or any other fibers we found is it adheres really well to the urethane. So that makes our welds really, really strong. Because the weakest part, once you weld the material together, is going to be how strong is that urethane stuck to the base fabric, right? So the downside is Kevlar has a hard time sticking to anything. So what we've done is we've mixed the Kevlar in with the polyester to get the tear strength of Kevlar, but the base adhesion strength of the polyester. So we've kind of played back and forth to get the ratio right. So our welds are as strong as the regular urethane welds we do. About overlap weld is about 250 pounds per square inch. So like I can take one square inch of fabric and do one weld, and I can hang by it with no problems, for example. The great thing about the Kevlar is that, you know, it's still thin enough that we can cut it, which is important. You know, I could make a material that is impossible to break, but then I couldn't cut it and build a boat out of it. So we have to kind of fine tune it. So it's 1,000 denier. So it's a lot larger fibers than typical on the pack rafting and lighter boat market. Most of those are anywhere from 200 to 840, depending on the company and the application. At least that's the research that I've done. You guys might know a bit more about from using those boats.
So every time I talk to people who make boats, they talk about deniers and pounds per square inch. None of that means anything to me. I don't know 1,000 denier different from 10 denier. Those are numbers that have no meaning to me.
So that's actually valuable. So those numbers can be a little bit misleading. Denier essentially is a weight of a certain length of fiber. So I could have, I think it's like 1 kilometer of fiber. How heavy is that? And basically it's a rough gauge to tell you how thick the fibers that make up the cloth are. So 1,000 denier versus 500 denier, the 1,000 denier is roughly twice the weight, so it's just a thicker fiber, which tends to be stronger. The problem is that a lot of manufacturers want to use that as a measuring stick, because not every type of plastic is the same strength, right? I could have a 200 denier Dyneema, and it's as strong as a 500 denier nylon, right? So it's not necessarily the best rubric to measure those things, but it's a good average. So what we wanted to do is, you know, there's a lot of boats out there that are super lightweight, which is great. There's a ton, you know, there's a great market for that. But we wanted to more target people that are avid rafters, avid kayakers, that want something that's more durable. So
you're speaking my language right here. I've been begging for this forever.
So Jeremiah, can I ask a couple questions on this?
Sure,
when you're talking about the wider, to try to get some perspective on it. So this material you're talking about using on these kayaks, compared to your like material that you normally use for your Sotars, like how much lighter is it? Like what percent lighter would it be?
So our regular raft fabric is 40 ounces per square yard. That's the weight of it. This fabric is 15 ounces per square yard. So you're about a third the weight.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then the other thing I was going to ask is like 1,000 denier sounds way heavier than the typical deniers for other pack rafts. How heavy do you expect your boat to be?
Right now, of the last few prototypes we have, we're in the 13.5-14 pound range.
So, oh, really?
That's at a 9-foot boat. So what we've done a couple different things to help save some weight. Right now we're using our traditional thigh straps, and those are about a pound. So at the trade show, I'll have an example of if you were just to use some basic webbing for a basic thigh strap, that'd save you almost 3/4 of a pound. Not quite as comfortable, but it depends on what you want, right? If you're packing in farther, I'm going to take a strap versus a robust thigh strap. But if I'm
nothing, use nothing.
Yeah, exactly. So, just, it just depends. The other thing is that added protection, a lot like our SL kayak, if you've ever been in one of our traditional kayaks, we have a wrap on the bottom. So there's a piece of material that's welded slick and kind of in line with the tubes all the way down the bottom to add extra puncture resistance.
Yeah.
So what we've done is we basically copied that with this Kevlar hybrid fabric. And then that allowed us to make the inflatable floor out of a much, much lighter material because it's being protected by the Kevlar underneath it. It's not going to get a stick. So we found a fabric that Arez uses for a variety of applications, primarily in like the aeronautical and nautical range for inflatable life preservers. So it's designed to be, you know, packed up and rolled for a long period of time and then inflated to high pressure to save your life, right? So the cool thing about it is it's the coating. They do what they call a kiss coat. So they do a really, really thin coating of urethane with a color in it. And then only on one side, they put a larger coating of clear urethane. And that means that it welds really, really well. So I can take this fabric and weld up the square of it and put it up to 4 or 5 PSI and not have a seam rupture. And that is not reinforcing the seam. So if you can imagine, if you've ever done any sewing or anything like that, or any welding, a raft is going to use an overlap seam. So all the pressure is going to be in tension. So it's a lot stronger. If I just take a piece of material and weld it flat to itself, it's going to want to peel. But because the weld strength of this material is so good, I can do a bottom and top and weld straight through the fabric, and it's still super durable. And it's only 8 ounces. So it's a 210 denier, 8 ounce per square yard fabric, which is pretty similar to like the backrest material, I think, of like for the floor inflatable for like an alpaca or capelli kind of material. The difference is the extra urethane that's on one side. So what that's allowed me to do is I don't have to do any cutouts for the baling. I could have the floor be nice and straight, which provides more lateral support on the tube. And then what I've been able to do is weld circles straight through the fabric, kind of like a Sia Summit air mattress, if you've ever used one of those before. And then I can punch baling holes through the middle of the weld. So essentially the floor welds, it bales through the floor, opposed to through the sides of the floor. Whoa. So it's very, very different than what we've ever done in the past. It allows for a lot more complexity in the design of a floor. So, and because we have that bottom wrap, it's a slick bottom. So it's not really taking advantage of the I-beams, let's say, in a regular I-beam floor to give you the tracking. So what we did to make the boat track better is we did a nice long straight section and then have the tape wrap to the end code. So if you've seen pictures of the boat, it's much different than our standard SL that has like a banana boat shape. And I did that on purpose to be wider and more stable, hold more weight, but also, I'm not sure about you, Zach, but when I run to like the Lower Illinois or whatever, I'm always sleeping in my boat. So having the boat be straighter for longer is just a more comfortable thing to sleep in. The other thing we did for the floor is those holes that bail through, we arranged it so that it's comfortable to sit on. So kind of like, for lack of a better word, kind of cups your butt, if that makes sense. And then we put a big bulge in the floor at the front. And that acts kind of like foot pegs. You can put your feet against it, dig your heels into where these divots where the circle welds are. And that locks you in place really well. So we don't have to add a thwart to put your feet against. We don't have to add foot pegs or anything like that. It's just built into the floor, which saves about a pound and a half.
That's amazing.
Wow, that's clever. How much lost space for rigging would that take up? Like in the, I usually rig a bag right there and then put my feet and push up against like a bag there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great question. So what we've done is that bulge marks the end of the floor. So basically the floor only goes in the straight section of the boat. So then in the bow and stern where it goes to the point, it's just the wrap there. So you have about 5 inches or more depth to put your bag where there isn't an inflatable thing in the way at all.
Cool. So that's clever. Wow. Yeah. Nice.
And what we found is, just like you, everyone's putting their stuff there, right? So if we had the inflatable floor go the whole way, it's not in the water, so it's not adding any help to the buoyancy. It's it's adding weight. And it is, if you were to put any weight there, it's raising that weight up, raising your center of mass and making it harder to keep your boat upright. One of the first ones we built, I had the floor go the entire way up. And I rigged my bag in the bow like I normally would. And I wanted to roll. The thing wanted to flip over. Just too much weight up high. So by cutting that out, it keeps the center of mass a lot lower and really, really makes it more stable. The other thing that we did is on this last design, we're working with Hyperlite Mountain Gear. And we kind of built the boat to fit their Porter 5,400 cubic inch pack. Just because it's a really durable pack, it's big.
It's the pack I use. I highly recommend that pack. It's amazing.
Oh, okay, cool, great. And that's what they said. They said that, you know, it's used all the time by pack rafters because you can put a bunch of stuff in it. So basically, when the boat rolls up, it takes about the bottom half of the boat of the bag.
You put it inside that bag. It'll fit inside that bag.
It'll fit inside. So basically, you just take the boat, fold it in half, and roll it straight down, and it will fit right inside. It fits snugly, but it fits inside that diameter of that bag on the bottom, because that bag tapers. So we wanted to make sure that when you're packing your stuff, the heaviest thing, the boat, will sit in the lowest part of the bag, so it's more comfortable to carry.
Yeah.
The other thing that we're working on is, you know, unfortunately,
for a second. When I run it with Hyperlite backpacks, mm-hmm. I'm usually putting on the outside of the pack.
Okay.
Because you're doing it overnight usually. So you want to put your gear inside the backpack, and then we mm-hmm. rig the boat to the outside of the pack. But okay. If I'm doing like a day trip where I'm hiking in for a day, yeah, that's pretty sweet to be able to throw it inside that pack.
Yeah. What I was looking to also is, what we've noticed is when I'm trying to get a lightweight, either a stuff sack or a roll down dry bag, something really, really super light to basically ship the boat in when you buy it, that mm-hmm. you can then pack it in also. Because for me, I have been using this boat, I've got a 55 liter Gregory bag, and I will put my boat in a sack essentially, and then put it in my bag. Then I have all my gear in smaller stuff sack, so it's easy to kind of take that stuff out, take the boat out, use it. That way, I have strapped it to the outside. You know, it's going to drag on trees and stuff if you're bushwhacking, if you're trying.
Oh, it definitely is hard on the boat.
Yeah, so that's why we wanted to make it so you could either put it on the outside of your bag with a protective cover over it, just to help for abrasion. Or have it so when you're done with your trip or whatever and you do need to hike out, you can put your boat in your bag and not get the rest of your stuff super dirty and wet and gross because it's all kind of contained in that other dry bag. Unfortunately, Hyperlite, they don't have a roll-down stuff sack that's designed to fit the 5400 yet. We're hoping that this boat picks up and creates a market for them if they want to make one big enough. That's definitely in the cards. Yeah,
that 5400 is a new pack. Like I have a bunch of these packs. Mm-hmm. I have the 4400s. I think that 5400 is something that I now wish I had because it's probably something new. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what they said is it's a newer bag, so they haven't built all of the peripheral equipment for it yet because the demand isn't there yet. But I think it will be.
I agree. What's sweet about that pack, that whole system, is the backpack itself, the Hyperlite packs, are almost waterproof. They're like almost all the tapes, the seams are taped. but they have little tiny light bags that go inside that Jeremiah is talking about. And when you put your gear inside these like super light sacks inside the pack, it's waterproof. And so it's like 99% waterproof. So it's an awesome system for pack rafting.
Right. And honestly, like, how often have you had a roll down dry bag in it and you flip your boat and it still gets your stuff wet? I mean, it's I would say that system you're talking about, those two working in conjunction, is as good as 90% of the roll top dry bags are on the market.
Are you saying that roll top dry bags work or don't work? Because my experience in roll top dry bags get stuff wet. It's hard to make roll top dry bags to keep your stuff dry. I've seen a lot of them not work.
Yes, I agree. The reason I agree is that it really comes down to how clean of a roll you get and how much stuff you have in there to push against. There's a lot of variables there. And honestly, like, if you get your boat flipped and it's submerged for a long period of time, stuff's going to get wet. It just kind of what happens. But what I like about that Dyneema, that super lightweight stuff sack that you're talking about, is that high-tech paint and those kind of things, patching in pack rafts, sticks to that Dyneema really well. So I had some that had holes in them, and I just Tyvek taped them, and they held great.
The Hyperlite packs.
Yeah.
They're easy to fix. So when I use the Hyperlite packs, sorry to interrupt that, when I use them, when we flip a kayak, a little bit of water gets inside the Hyperlite pack, but those little Hyperlite bags keep stuff dry. So my sleeping bag is in a stuff sack, and it gets inside the pack a little bit, but the stuff inside the stuff stacks are dry. So it's a great system.
Exactly. And what I like about those bags is we actually changed the design of the boat kind of to fit those bags a bit better.
Wow.
Because they have on the back, on the outside, they have that nice dating chain. So you can just tie stuff in wherever, right?
Yep.
So we're actually putting webbing daisy chains on the boat so that when you have your Hyperlite pack, you can just turn it where the daisy chain is on the top, and you can just tie your bag in through the daisy chain on the bag, through the daisy chain on the boat. So it all kind of lines up, and it's the same thing.
Yeah. Hmm. That's exactly.
Speaking of moving stuff on. Sorry, Zach.
Oh, I was just saying, that's exactly how we tie those things in. I think that's amazing. You guys are thinking that far ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a good system, and there's. Opposed to having a D-ring, which is heavy and gives you only one point of attachment, having that daisy chain gives you a lot more versatility. We even like it to the point where the backrest that we made uses the same kind of welding technique as the floor, and it's flat and tall. So it's comfortable, and it doesn't take up a whole lot of space. It's not like a thwart. So it's flat against your back. And then we basically just have hook and ladder or ladder lock straps at the top that go through on the inside of the boat. There's 16 inches of daisy chain, so you can adjust the position of your floor back and forth by about a foot. Of your seat back and forth by about a foot. And then you just run a strap farther forward and then up to the top of the seat, making a triangle. So then you can tighten it against your back and adjust the angle and pitch a little bit of the seat. And the reason I like that seat is it's light. It's about half a pound. But also it's flat. So if you wanted that inflatable padding, you could still put your bag behind you, and strap it down. Or if you want to save the weight, you leave your seat at home and then you just lean against the back of your main dry bag. That's what I usually do. I put my dry bag that has all of my gear in it with my sleeping bag on the bottom of that against my back. And then I'll put a smaller dry bag with like my lunch or whatever up in the front of the boat, just to save the weight of not having to carry a seat. But so that's why the boat will be about 14 pounds, but could be like 13 if you decide to leave some of that stuff at home.
Mm. Aaron, I'm gonna say one thing, and then you can ask your question. I just want to say one thing. Yeah. Like, I've never heard a boat manufacturer understand this level of detail for what we need for these boats. Like, Jeremiah, you definitely understand the struggles we're going through. When you talk to other boat manufacturers, they're making these light boats, but they don't understand the details that matter like this. So thank you. I mean, it's obvious you know what you're talking about. So I just want to say thank you. I
appreciate that.
Aaron, go ahead. I'll let Aaron go ahead.
No, I was just curious. Have you guys looked at all into zipper storage in terms of you're talking about storing stuff?
Geez,
like,
Aaron.
I
know you don't like them, Zach.
So
Zach hates that, but that's because Zach's using it for commercial trips, which is a whole different ballgame.
Because let me tell you why. Because if you unzip your boat, you have to pump it up again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? Your stuff stays really dry inside of it. The center of gravity is really low.
It stays dry until the boat pops.
Well, you got a lot of problems if your boat pops. But anyway,
it sinks.
I'm sure the sojars aren't going to pop. So
the problem with zipper storage, here's the problems. One, you have to pump up your boat every day, and you don't always carry like a big pump on these trips, so you're blowing up your mouth every day. And two, mm-hmm. if the boat pops, it sinks with your stuff in it. So
sink because you put it in dry bags inside it, Zach, and those dry bags actually act as flotation. So if you do pop, you're less likely to sink.
All right. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, Aaron.
No, this is all valuable. That's why I want to talk to you guys, because how people are using their stuff is how we want to be able to customize them. And you know, Sotar, we do custom. So for the first run of this boat, we're going to make the standard size. But, like for instance, Zach, you're taller than I am. I'm a pretty short guy. So you want the boat longer. That's not a problem. We do that. But like for the zipper, we have done some experimentation with it. The problem that we've found is that is the pressure difference. So this boat, I can run it at 3 PSI, so it's going to handle more like an inflatable kayak than a pack grab where you're running at 1.5 or so. I can pressure test this boat at 6 PSI. I can make it rigid enough that I can put it up on sawhorses and stand on it, and it's not going to waffle on me. So when I get the boat up to pressure, I'm a little concerned about fissures coming through the well on those zippers. We have had some trouble. We've gotten them to hold air, at 1 or 2 PSI and hold fine for a day. But as soon as you start putting 3 or 4 PSI in it, it just starts to lose the zipper.
So here's what I hear you saying. You're saying that zippers are perfectly adequate for these overpriced inner tubes that people have, the normal pack rafts, but for real kayaks, they won't work. That's what I'm hearing.
Not yet. Not in my. This is just my opinion. I don't want to say what T-Zip is doing or whatever. I just know that of the ones that we've tested so far, we have not gotten them to hold up at high enough pressure to make the boat rigid for the whole day. That's why I'm not putting them in my boat for this first batch. I'm still talking with T-Zip, trying to get some more different models, trying to find different welding techniques, that kind of stuff to make it work. But it's not there to a point yet where I would put the Sotar name on it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Thanks for explaining that. The next question for you, I got another one, is like, how much are these going to run?
So that is, right now we're looking in the $2,000 range, depending on a couple different factors. We're probably going to start out with the traditional 3-year warranty that most of these boats are at, and then adjust from there, because we haven't had these in the field for more than 6 months worth of trial. So basically the warranty also dictates the price, and this fabric is experimental at this point. So we may make some changes in the next couple batches that may affect the price, give or take a little bit. But to me, it's worth it. If I'm going to have to raise the price of the boat by $100 because I'm going to get better, stronger welds, to me, that's totally worth it. So that's kind of the entry level right now. We'll probably look at is about $2,000.
It doesn't seem like you're gonna make any money on this project. It seems like you're not gonna sell a ton of them. You're putting tons of time into it. Is this a business move or just like a passion thing?
I would say more of a passion for now, because so my background, I guess, is that, I ran track in college. I was always a runner and backpacker and that kind of stuff. So when I took over here, I noticed that, man, if I'm going to rivers that are not like on the road, where you have really nice, boat ramps everywhere, you're carrying your stuff in and it sucks. And then another part of the market is just like, how many young kids do I want to get into boating? How many people want to get into, you know, R2ing more, but it's a pain in the butt because they can't get their boat to the river because they don't have four people to carry it for them. So it's, there's a lot of potential there. Like, for instance, I was at the Eco Challenge, and one of the guys, Paulo, down at Earth River in Argentina, he was there also. And he played around with the boat a little bit, and he's like, man, I want a cataract out of that stuff. You know, he wants to make himself a carbon fiber breakdown frame, pack back and pack in a tiny little cataract. I'm like, that would be sweet. So I think that's the way the industry's going. I mean, the lighter, better, right? I mean, it's just...
So do you think? I mean, that's what I was going to ask. Could you make a raft out of this material?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually working with Trevor Croft.
Oh, Aaron, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. We lost him.
The floor is a little tricky. What was that?
Hey, Jeremiah, go back a second. Your audio went out for a second. You mentioned you're working with Trevor.
Okay. Yeah. So he and Daniel Jenkins, I think is his last name.
Yep.
Are looking at doing some first ascents on some side creeks down in Northern California, and just like the access is a nightmare to carry stuff in. So we, with this fabric being 15 ounce, 11 foot boat, like 19, 20 inch tube diameter. When I do like the really rough math, not taking consideration what type of D-rings I'm gonna use, whatever, I'm looking at about 40 pounds or so.
I just want to say, like, there's that side of it. And I talked to Trevor yesterday about some different things, and one of them was going to Kyrgyzstan to run trips next year.
And exactly.
One of the issues is getting, when you're going international, is getting boats to Kyrgyzstan. I mean, I looked into shipping a regular boat, and it was like $2,000 each way to ship a boat. But if you can have a raft under 50 pounds, you can check it.
And you can, exactly. So that is,
there's the hiking in, but there's the getting boats overseas is huge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's my target, is the more products I can get under 50 pounds, or more like 48, so you have enough weight for the boat bag, the better. Because, I mean, I was down in Fiji for the Eco Challenge, and it's just an amazing country, and I want to, you know, start looking at outfitters to do trips down there where we can actually bring the boats here and do anything from sea kayaking to mountain kayaking to hiking the trails to scuba diving, the whole gambit, right? So those kinds of big ticket trips aren't feasible with a regular boat. I mean, think about how many guys are, you know, bushcraft, you know, flying boats into Alaska or whatever. Yeah. And running these heavy, big boats that just don't fit in the planes. So that's kind of where I'm thinking with this fabric, is kind of, you know, the more and more we as humans explore, the farther and farther we're going to have to go into the backcountry to do cool new things. And we just can't do it with the existing equipment. So that's kind of why I want to go toward this lighter type of market.
Man, hey, Jeremiah, with that wrap, with that wrap you're talking about, is that going to have a lace and floor that you could take out to make it even lighter? So you'd carry, it would be like 30 pounds then if you took the floor out?
Yeah. So that's what the tricky thing I'm looking at is, the traditional I-beam floor, when we weld the I-beams in place, the hot air has to have a very large surface area of heating in order to more evenly heat the coating to get a stronger weld. But when we do that with a lighter fabric, it tends to overheat the coating, opening up pinholes on the inside of the floor, which will then leak through the base fabric. So we have some ideas to make it work. The easy option would be imagine a bucket type wrap on the bottom of the floor that has bailing holes, and then you put a lightweight floor in it, similar to the one we're making for this kayak. So you still have the rigidity and the inflation from the inflatable floor, but you're saving the weight and you don't have to do the traditional I-beam construction. So that's one possibility. I do have another idea to try to make the I-beams work for the Kevlar fabric. It's just we're not there yet. We're still playing with
If you take the floor out, though, all of a sudden it's like, I mean, the floor doesn't weigh as much as the outside tube anyways. That's because I was working with a long time with Sotor on the same problem of getting a raft. I wanted a 12-foot raft with the outside tube under 50 pounds. And we went through multiple iterations and we couldn't get there back then. This is like, I mean, like literally like probably about 10 years ago.
Okay.
When Cheryl was, you know, doing stuff, we went through this whole process trying to get that outside tube under 50 pounds. Cause I was just like, yeah, I'll take the floor out, roll it up separate. And I figure like two people, one person, their check is that outside tube. And then the other person's check is the thwarts and the floor along with some other stuff. And then, you know, then you're good. You can go R2 anywhere with it. You go take a boat like that and you could check it real easily. And then
Aaron, it looks like you can get both the floor and the boat under 50 pounds, which
I know that's
crazy. One check bag. And you don't have to, like, when you look into putting a floor in, that's a headache. I mean, to try.
Yeah. I've done it before though. Like we hiked into the Upper Kings. That's what we did.
Yeah, it's just a headache.
I'd rather carry something lighter and just it's not that bad for a little boat like that. It doesn't take that long.
And my hope is that I can make this boat so it's under 50 pounds, the entire boat together. And that allows you, if you are R2ing it, then all you do is one person's packing the boat, the other person's packing the camping gear. So you're splitting up the load there. But based on the carrying capacity of a boat, like so let's say 11 foot, doing something kind of like a hybrid between the SL and the ST, if you know our boats very well. So it's the long straight section like an ST, so it's a more stable footprint, but then having the diminishing tube to increase the rake underneath the tube, so when you're doing big drops it pushes you out a bit more instead of punching into the waves.
Wait, are you saying diminishing tubes are better for running drops?
It depends on the height, it depends on what size diameter you're talking about. This is just my limited opinion. Right. So when I'm doing,
I've
asked everybody big drops, but no means. But just from the geometry of it, I can have, let's say I have a 20-inch tube on a 14-foot raft, with the same height of the top of the tube. If it diminishes, I bring the bottom of that tube up. So there's just more distance from the bottom of the tube in the bow to the water line. So it's going to have geometrically it makes sense to me that it's going to ride over stuff a little bit easier versus punching into it. Again, I'm never going to say I'm the most experienced person. So
I'm going to tell you my limited opinion, and then Aaron can tell who's
right. Yeah, please. Let's get a chance to speak on this one.
Let me tell you my limited opinion, then Aaron can tell us what the right answer is. I think the only reason to have diminishing tubes is to create more interior space in the boat for either gear or passengers or to make people get splashed more. I think for running rivers, this is my limited opinion. Diminishing tubes only hurts you for actually running rapids. Aaron, do you want to be the tiebreaker?
I'm going to say for running big drops, I'm with Zach. Like I like a big tube in general. Like I just go look at the Sierra Mac Creek boats, you know, and like they got a huge tube up front. And you drop off something like, that's nice. I'm curious to try more of a diminishing tube in high volume because I wonder if there's less resistance on the front. Like the Sierra Mac boats, again, I'll say at high volume, they're horrible because it acts like a big, bumper and it stops everything you hit. And so you want more. I mean, one way to minimize that problem is to get a lot more rocker on the front, like the Foo de Lay Foo boats you guys built for Earth River that we used to use with the high rocker on the front made a huge difference for popping over waves.
Right.
But then I'd be curious if you had a diminishing tube on the front, if that would also help by more like make it a little bit more like a dory where it could slice through the front of the wave more. And if it's breaking hard, you know, you just punch through it. So I'd be curious. I haven't tried enough of that in high volume.
I'm totally game. Let's build one with diminishing tube and build one without diminishing tube. Take them on the river and see what's better.
I'm into that.
That sounds like fun. I'm right there with you. That sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah, let's go. Awesome. Yeah, take in some different. Yeah, we'll let Daniel Jenkins try it off some big drops because he's a little nuttier than the rest of us, and so he can test it running some bigger stuff.
Sounds good to me, man. Sounds good to me. Just with that boat. That's kind of my hope is just to get it so it's under 50 pounds, One of the ways that I'm going to do that is saving weight on the D-rings. So I'm working with, I'm not sure if you guys have heard of them, Dutchware. They're an East Coast company that makes hyperlight hammocks, and they do all titanium hardware. So I
have several titanium D-rings.
Yeah, yeah.
That is so badass.
Like for instance, for the pack raft, also we're looking at doing titanium D-rings.
Oh man, that is the best.
I think Zach's gonna have titanium D-rings on his rogue boats next year.
I can't even believe I haven't thought of this before.
Well, the best thing about the titanium is that for a pack raft or for the kayak, the biggest thing when you're rolling the boat is the valves and the D-rings. You know, you feel it when you're rolling the boat. So by doing a D-ring out of titanium, we can make it a lot smaller with still the same strength. So it's going to pack tighter. Didn't have any of them. I'll bring some to the show for you to take a look at, Zach. They didn't quite work out exactly. So the first couple of pack rafts we have on display at the show won't have them. But I'll bring the titanium D-rings and hardware for you to take a look at.
And while we're on the topic of the show, are you going to bring a hyperlight pack too?
Yeah, yeah. I ordered a couple of the 5400s and some of their, their rescue bags and that kind of stuff to have on display. Awesome. That way you can have one of the pack rafts inflated. I'm going to have it hanging from a fish scale so you can see the weight as you walk by. And then have another one rolled up in a bag so if you want to put it on your back and feel what it's like to carry it.
Okay. And Jeremiah, do you realize that, like, at AO, that's an outfitter show, I'm probably the only outfitter that cares about this.
Oh, totally.
Like, there's probably like nobody else who cares about lightweight kayaks. I'm just gonna be sitting there drooling over this stuff, and everybody's gonna be like, "Where's your raft?"
Well, there are two things about that. One is that, like you're talking about, is access to getting trips, boats on a plane. So if I can offer a product that's going to allow an outfitter to do different kinds of trips to open up how, like, man, I can run trips in South America because I can take my stuff with me. That means that I can stay open for longer. I can make more money in the off season, right? Well, so to me, that makes sense. The other thing too, I'm going to have on display is one of our MicroStrikes. It's a new lightweight fishing boat, small fishing boat. So the end goal is to have, a fishing boat like the MicroStrike made of the Kevlar fabric. So it'll be like, 35, 40 pounds for those guys that are doing trips or wherever they're flying in, just to show that we're doing new stuff.
I love it. I'm so into innovation. Like, I love that you guys are innovating. I want to go back and ask a question I've been wondering.
Sure.
E-Res makes urethane fabric, and Sotar uses urethane fabric almost exclusively. This new fabric, Is it urethane?
Yes.
So when you say Kevlar fabric, you're saying it's like a urethane Kevlar combination. It's still urethane,
right? So
just like it's lighter, but has a Kevlar something in it.
Right. So the cloth, what's inside the fabric, is a mixture of a polyester and a Kevlar fibers. So in the weave, it's every fifth fiber is a strand of Kevlar. And then the other four are polyester to get that good welding strength to the polyester. Then it's coated in urethane. So the plastic that's on the outside of the fabric is urethane. So what we're welding is urethane. What's holding air is urethane. What's handling the abrasion is urethane. Just the strength and tear strength of the fabric, that's the reinforced by the Kevlar.
Okay. I want to ask a couple of quick questions about this boat, and then we probably have to move on to the end of the episode, which we typically do gear of the week, and we all suggest some kind of gear we like. I don't know if we told you about that, Jeremiah, but just some quick questions, and Aaron, if you have any quick ones. I just want to get to the kayak. So the weight you think is going to be like 12, 13 pounds. Is that right?
Yeah, ideally. We'll probably be about 14 at the show because we will have the heavier thigh straps and the backrest in it. So it'll be about 12 base weight, I guess, and then 14 fully rigged outfitted weight.
The cost, about $2,000.
About there, yeah.
And then when do you think it'll be available for sale?
So I'm looking at essentially starting to sell it at the show. I will be putting out some ads coming up in January, maybe even before Christmas, for ordering the first batch. They don't have a lot of this fabric in stock that's left. So basically we'll be taking pre-orders, and then those orders will then justify to Rez to do another run of the fabric. So that being said, the current fabric I have now is black. So I'm taking suggestions on what colors you guys would like for the next run. I'm leaning toward gray because it's a neutral color that won't be as hot as the black. Because I've also had a lot of interest for people that are like fly fishermen for this kayak, to be able to get into small fishing holes. But
I'm always into colors that photograph well, so they have to pop. I'm always into yellows, bright. The green airboat is an amazing color for photography. The new blue color is awful.
See, that's exactly what I was going to ask about, because the floor is that fluorescent yellow green. It pops. It's great. The webbing we're going to use for parts of it are going to be that fluorescent yellow. So I was going to try and get the tube color made of that same color because it looks so good. It is. I mean, it's a safety thing too, right? You're not only going to get good pictures, but when
you can see the boats.
See the boat. So, like for instance, what I want to do, the floor system in that kayak, it's tied in through the bailing holes that are in the wrap, which allows for a handle on the bottom of the boat. So when you flip your boat over, that's highly visible. So you can grab that handle and hold on to it as you flip the boat, wrap it, or you can use it to flip the boat back over and then get back in. So having that high visibility is really, really important to me, at least for what we do, right? For whitewater. For fishermen, they want as dull as possible to blend in their environment. But that's a different market.
Yeah. Okay, I have one more question, then Aaron, if you have any last questions, you can ask yours. Sorry to hog these questions, but so Jeremiah, you know, like the boat I designed for SOTAR is the ATV. I think it's perfect, personally. How is this design? I'm just being honest. I'm shocked you wouldn't just take my design and roll with it. How is this design better than the ATV?
There are a couple different things that it allows us to do. First of all, it allows us to have two chambers without having to have any baffles. So, but because the tubes are independent, you have the weight of the valve, but if you do, you get a puncture on one side, your whole tube isn't going flat. And then we save the weight.
They're like side by side. Each side is a baffle. The right and left are separate tubes.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So it's more like our SL kayak, where they're two completely separate tubes that are then bound together underneath the end cone. The other thing is there are fewer seams. So we have the long straight section, and then it just curves up from there. So there's literally just two main welds versus the ATD, which has, I think, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 per end.
Wow.
Yeah. You know why we did that, though? This is my understanding. Sorry to go on a tangent. Was that if the pieces were smaller that you cut, it would use less material and be more efficient, right? So the fabric's supposed to be the most expensive part. When you're cutting out the fabric, it's better to have a lot of small pieces instead of one big piece, because it's a more efficient use of fabric.
Correct. So what we did with this one to get around that problem is because the straight sections are nice and long, and the ends are then cut and then taper from there up to the rocker, that is turned on the pattern. So I actually can get – the reason why the price is $2,000 and not way, way higher is because the tube diameter, I can cut the top and left and right tube next to each other on the width of fabric I can get from the red. So it is extremely efficient.
Your design is – like you factored in how to cut the fabric efficiently into how you design the boat. Man, that's smart.
The other thing about it is that because there's fewer seams, we're saving weight on seam tape.
Yep. Man, brilliant. Okay, Aaron, I'm done asking questions.
Well, Zach, what'd you call your kayak, inflatable kayak?
The ATV.
The ATV. So how much, if we use this material to make the ATV, how much would the ATV weigh?
We actually made one. Zach sent it to you guys a while ago. It was blue. And that material was a 20 ounce. It's a little bit heavier, and that was about 25 pounds. So the boat would be about probably 20 or so with this fabric. But again, the problem we have with the lightweight fabric with that floor system that's in the ATV, which is pretty cool because it's a welded floor, so it's really slippery over rocks. There's no protection flap or anything that's lacing the floor in to grab on stuff. The problem is that's an IV floor. So we had a high failure rate of the floors leaking. So by putting the wrap on the bottom and then doing a super lightweight fabric for the floor as an insert, essentially, we ended up saving weight, but also making it easier to build and hold air better. As far as the lightweight application, the ATV with the 40-ounce stuff is great because it's super bombable. But with the lightweight stuff, we just had a hard time. It would leak through the base fabric and then leak through the bailing holes. And it just, it just didn't work the way I'd like it to. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, that was great. You answered my question brilliantly. Aaron, do you have other questions?
I'm going to say this. This isn't a question. This is a comment. I think we need to have Jeremiah back on the show again, because there's a lot more questions I want to ask him, and I want to nerd out a lot more about Sotars. So hopefully Jeremiah will come back. Because I ended this conversation with more questions that I want to know about than I started with, and you answered so many questions so well. So thank you. It was really fun talking to you. It was really, I love nerding out on the pack raft style inflatable kayaks, and you have a lot of knowledge, and you think a lot about this stuff in a way I think. I speak for Zach when I say this too, that way Zach and I like to think about too. So it's been really, really fun to pick your brain. Thanks for talking with us. All right, gear of the week. Let's do it. I might go to Tyvek's tape. I mean, Jeremiah brought up Tyvek's tape too. I'm like, if Jeremiah, who runs Sotar, is talking about Tyvek's tape, I already thought it was cool for doing repairs on the river, but now he's talking about using it. It's like, yeah, dude, that's the stuff. Tyvek's tape. That stuff's so amazing.
Like, can you repair a boat with Tyvek tape?
Well, that's what pack rafters use, like, to repair their boats. They just Tyvek them up, bring a bunch of Tyvek tape.
I don't even think I know what Tyvek tape is. What is it?
So Tyvek is this material that they put on the outside of houses. Yeah. It creates a membrane, so supposedly like moisture can go out but not come in. And this is the tape they use, I believe, to hold those pieces of material together, to seal between them. And it's kind of like duct tape, but it's like the next generation's even better than duct tape, because I don't think it gets so... Not as gummy, I would believe. I mean, Jeremiah may be able to speak more about, why Tyvek is great.
Can you guys still hear me? I lost.
Yeah, we got you back.
You're back. Okay, cool. So Tyvek tape, the adhesive is fantastic. The nice thing about it for me is that it peels up easier and it doesn't leave a residue like Tear-Aid does. So it's actually easier. So if you do get a tear on your boat and you use Tyvek tape, you get it back to us, it's actually even easier for us to then affect a permanent repair. The biggest problem with Tyvek tape, and I learned this the hard way, is that it doesn't have any fabric in the tape. So it has no, the adhesive is great, holds air great, but it has no strength to it. So if you were doing like an inside-outside patch of tape, use duct tape or Gorilla tape on the inside to have the strength, and then the Tyvek on the outside to hold the air. I had one of the early pack rafts, we were just beating the crap out of and dragging it over some basalt, and it got an okay little gash in it. So we just did Tyvek tape. Worked fine. Then we got back to the shop. I wanted to see how strong the Tyvek tape was. Put it up to like 5 PSI, and it started to bubble, and it blew, but it blew with so much force, it tore the fabric open to, like, instead of being 2 inches wide of a gash, it was a foot wide. It was... It holds awesome. And I think that's why it's really great for the pack rafts is you're not putting 4 PSI in the boat. You're putting 1, 2 maybe. So, I'd be super hesitant to use it on like a gear boat for a big gash. But if it's a pinhole, if it's a small little like abrasion and it's fizzing, dude, I'd use that in a heartbeat.
My gear of the week this week is the GoPro 8. It's the brand new GoPro. I've been using it a little bit. It's just easy to use. It's nice. It's a little expensive, but if you haven't had a GoPro, if you had a GoPro like 3 and you haven't got a new GoPro in a while, the new ones are pretty sweet. I highly recommend them. Down the river, Thanks for joining this episode of the River Talk Podcast. If you have questions or comments, email us at questions@rivertalkpodcast.com. We have a Facebook page that we never use, but if you want to be a fan of us on Facebook, that'd be super cool. And yeah, we'll talk to you next week. I'm on Chattahoochee on Rio Grande, the Allegheny.